Welcome to the newest episode of 2024 of PCSD.
What's the word?
Your host, Kevin Adger, and
Angelica Carrillo. And we have a very special guest for you for this first episode of the year. We have Deputy Chris Rodriguez, and he is part of the K-9 unit here at PCSD. And we really just want to pick his brain about what is involved with the K-9 unit and also a special bond that he's had with his former partner, K-9 Kenzo. So we're going to get into all of that. Chris, thank you so much for agreeing to come on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're excited to have you, and we really appreciate you coming on.
Sure thing.
How long have you been with the K-9 unit?
It's been 6 years.
Why did you want to be a part of the K-9 unit? What made you say, hey, this is something I want to be a part of?
Yeah, I believed it was the best unit to be a part of in this department. I'm a huge dog lover. And to be able to go to work with a four-legged friend and have him in the back seat with you at all times and put your trust into him and him put his trust into you is something special. And I couldn't think of a better way to spend my day every day with him and just going to all the calls. And that's what really got me interested in it. And then I was reached out to a couple people in the unit saying that, hey, I think you'd be really good in this unit. And that just kind of made it come to life. And then I got my sights set on it, and I tested and studied, and here I am, like 6 years later.
It's like the dream job, right? You get paid to hang out with a dog.
I think it was definitely my dream job. And I think that a lot of people share that sentiment, and it really is something special.
Chris, tell us, how many canine partners have you had so far?
Kenzo was my second dog. My first, who is now retired, canine Rico. He's an 11-year-old Dutch Shepherd. He was on the department for 6 years. And I inherited him from a previous handler who promoted to sergeant. And that's what gave me the opportunity to come in. And I got him trained up. And we had a good four and a half years together. And we built a bond and that trust. And then it was time for him to retire. Now I get to adopt him, and he's at home, just being lazy and enjoying that retired life like he should. And he worked hard for it. And now the family gets to take care of him at home as well.
Nice.
So special.
Yes.
Yeah. A quick question. How hard was the process to get into the K-9 unit for you?
It's a very difficult process. Probably one of the hardest ones I've had to be a part of. There's a lot of studying that goes that's involved. You have to be well-versed in use of force, search and seizure. And any deputy can do it. It's just where I was in my career, I had 7 years on. And what I had to study is a lot of what you learn in the academy, but it's on a much grander scale. And you have to, the application of what you learn in the academy is far more important. And the questions are harder, the scenarios are harder. And what you have experienced out on patrol on the streets help you. But it's still, you never know what you're going to come into with the oral boards. There is a physical aspect of it. You have to run the POPAT, which shouldn't be hard for those who wanting to work a dog. That a lot of people breeze through that part. And then there's a few moments where if you haven't been coming out to canine training and been around the dogs, you actually have to get in a suit. You have to take muzzle hits from the dog. And if you have never been around that, it can be very overwhelming, very intimidating. And luckily for me, I was in DUI at the time, and I was able to come out to trainings often, learn about the dogs, learn about the culture, help out as a role player. And so that part was easy, but it was the studying. I tested one time, and there was 8 people who put in for it, and I finished 5th, so I didn't get the position. So I had to study more and try again. And I don't think I would ever try a third time. As it's a lot of studying. It's very overwhelming. And thankfully, I got it the second time.
Nice.
Very competitive.
It's very competitive. And it's not for everybody. And if it's something that you want to do, you should definitely put in for it. But knowing that it's a tough job, and they're not just going to give it to anybody. You know, there's a lot of responsibility to have a four-legged friend with you. It's a huge asset for the department and an expensive asset. So the selection process is very strict, and they're just not going to give a dog to just anybody,
right?
Especially a bite dog.
Right.
You talk about it not being for everyone and it being tough. You recently went through something very, very tough. It's been more than 2 months since you lost your canine partner, Kenzo. How are you doing?
I'm good. You know, I have moments of sadness and I miss him tremendously. But I'm quickly comforted by the fact that he's a hero. And I'm here speaking with you guys because of him. There's other deputies who went home to their families that night because of him. The suspect was not fatally harmed that night because of Kenzo. So knowing that he was a hero, it brings me comfort and strength to keep getting through with it. I'll never forget him. I do miss him tremendously, but I think in time it'll heal and I'll be able to keep on moving on.
I will say during the memorial for Kenzo, you went up there and speak. That had to be tough. What drove you to go up there and speak in front of the public and kind of express your emotions about your partner?
Yeah, it was a difficult decision. And I wasn't sure if I was going to do it all the way up to a moment of there was a cue during the ceremony that if I just didn't do that cue, then everyone knew I wasn't going to speak. But I did come. I brought some strength and some confidence to go up there. But what fueled me to go is a lot of people in this department and in the community asked how I was doing. And over time, there were some good days and some bad days. But ultimately, I am okay. And I had to tell a lot of people I was okay. And for me not to get up there and confirm that for everybody, I felt that it was not necessarily selfish, but unfair not to show everybody that I was okay. You know, words only go so far, but actions speak louder than those words. And by getting up there, I could tell everybody, I am okay. Look at me. I am okay. And you can stop worrying about me because people won't stop unless you give them some validation. But then also, being a member of this department for over 12 years, I've come to realize that I am a leader amongst my peers. And for me to get up there and show them that, hey, you can go through adversity, you can go through tragedy. It's even though it's going to be difficult, you have to get up there and show that you can, because we have to keep moving on. And for me, I felt it was important that people, one, saw that I was okay, but also lead by example saying, yes, I am dealing with this, but look at me, I am up here and staying strong, because who knows what other people are going through. And frankly, some are going through much tougher things than I, even losing Kenzo was. And as hard as that is to believe, we have to make sure that's a reality. And if I can encourage and inspire somebody to get up there and get through that, then that's what I want to be there for.
Wow. It's inspiring.
It's a hard job, right? And for you to be up there and show that in front of a lot of people. You talked about having your previous dog there at home and retired. It's sort of, you go to work every day and it's a job, but having a canine partner, it's part of your family. And so it wasn't just a loss for you.
No, it wasn't. I know the night of the incident, I called my wife and said, hey, I'm going to the vet. I don't know what's wrong with Kenzo, but this is where I'm at. I'm fine. And she said it was very difficult. She organized some childcare for my son late at night. She was able to come to the vet with me. And that weekend was just as hard for her as it was for me. She understood the different connection that Kenzo and I had, but she respected it because of Rico. She understood that now that Rico's retired, she sees that bond. That bond was transferred over to her while I'm at work with Rico. And she couldn't imagine losing Rico. And she knows exactly what I was going through, at least to some extent. And I got some time off. The department allowed me to take some days off, but she had to go to work still that Monday. It happened on a Friday. She had the weekend with me. And then on Monday, she had to go back to work. And for her to deal with that tragedy and have to still go through work, she was she showed some resiliency as well and some strength. And it was pretty impressive and inspiring.
Do you have a favorite memory or story with Kenzo, whether it's out in the field, he did something that you didn't expect and you're like, this dog?
Yeah, there's a lot of that this dog conversation, I will say. But there is a lot of excitement that happened in our short year and a half, over almost 2 year career. But one that sticks in my mind that humbled me a lot is actually when we first purchased him. We went to Louisiana and we had a drive back. And when you have a dog that you have never met, that you know has the capabilities of biting you and apprehending anybody that he sees, and you just don't know that dog. I spent 4.5 years with Rico, and that's what I'm used to. And he was an 85 pound Dutch Shepherd. And now I have a 65 to 70 pound Belgian Malinois. And he's definitely wiry. He's younger. You get used to that and almost complacent. And then as we're walking, or we stopped at a gas station to take a break, letting the dogs run around a little bit on leash. And as I'm walking him, it was windy that morning, and a empty water bottle comes rolling by us, and he snagged it before I could even predict it. He was that quick, and he snagged it. Him and I haven't had any obedience training at that point, so he got to keep his empty water bottle for the rest of the trip, because I wasn't taking it from him and he wasn't going to give it to me. But that was a memory that I had. It was very humbling, and I realized the intensity that he had, and it prepared me for our training, knowing what really I had. He was quick and I had to be quicker, and I wasn't used to that. So that one I hold in my heart deeply, because he humbled me enough at that very moment to train him to where he was. And although we only had just shy of 2 years together, and I had a lot of work to do with him, he was becoming a very predictable, trustworthy canine that I think he had a lot more moments to be had with me, and definitely special moments. But that one sticks in my head a lot, just because of it terrified me. And he got to keep his water bottle, though.
Yeah, those dogs love water bottles. It's that sound, right?
It's the sound, but ultimately it's putting something in their mouth. That's what, when they're in a certain drive, the only thing that's going to satisfy that drive is them putting something in their mouth. And so whether it be a water bottle, a shoe, the back headrest of a patrol car, whatever it be, they want to put their foot there, that fill their mouth with that. And that's what's going to satisfy them. So I think that time he was anxious, most likely, because he had never met me either. And I was just as scared as him as he is probably of me. And we're starting to build that bond and that trust. And he said, you know what, I need to put something in my mouth. And that water bottle flying by sounds good and looks good. And he got it.
What would do you want the community to know about the bond that you and Kenzo shared?
The bond is as special as everyone would imagine. If you think of your own household pets, that bond is unbreakable. It's stronger with some people, but it's very similar on what we're dealing with. But what's different is the trust. That trust is grown throughout your career with a dog all the way to retirement. Literally until the last day I had with Rico, there was trust being built. And that trust is earned from both ends. And it's the bond that helps that. So as you can imagine how it is with your own household pets, you understand how important that bond is and how if you were ever to lose that bond. But the trust, to put your trust in a dog and then knowing that he's going to put that trust in you, is what I think people don't realize that we're trying to do here. And that it's difficult to know that, yes, he's a dog, he's trained, and you're going to predict and expect him to perform a certain way. But they don't all perform the same way. They have a mind of their own. And it's that trust that is built between the handler and the canine. That's what makes them so successful. And I think that if we respect that trust a little bit more, and knowing that we're putting a lot of trust in these dogs, and those dogs are putting a lot of trust in us, that's how we can save lives, potentially, in my opinion.
Definitely. You talked about those deputies going home that night because of the trust that you had in Kenzo and he had in you. You mentioned being terrified when you first got him with that water bottle experience. How long did it take for you guys to say, hey, like, you're my partner now?
Luckily for Kenzo and I, it was almost immediate. I think he had a rough trip coming from the Netherlands. That's where he was from. He was shipped over and came to Louisiana by plane and by boat. And we go out to Louisiana. I think they had them for about a week. We bring them out and do some tests. And then we select them. And hey, now you got a 16-hour car ride to Arizona. It was in January when we got them. So it was, you know, still humid in Louisiana, but now it's dry in Arizona. So they're going through a lot of different things. So quickly, home life was better than he had ever had. He was getting food regularly. He was, it was good food also, high quality. And he also gets hot dogs because the easiest way to build a bond is through food. These dogs only need four things in their life. That's every dog is the same way. They want food, water, shelter, and pack fulfillment. Those are the only things that anybody needs to provide for their dog. So if you can provide those four things, the bond is going to happen very quickly. And if you give them some hot dogs, I think they will like you a little bit more than the previous person who was taking care of them who didn't give them hot dogs. So that's a trick that we use, and it happens very quickly. And for Kenzo and I, it was days. I think there was, if not hours, when I first had him, we had to stop in San Antonio on the way back, and we're in the staying in hotels, and we had to bring him in. And he's trusting me, and I'm trusting him not to break off on the leash and bite anybody or bite me. And so I think quickly that bond was starting to grow. And I think probably 2 days into it, it was pretty obvious that it was there. It's different, though. It depends on handlers. I had experience, so I knew where to go. I knew the timing to give him a toy. I knew the timing to give him a hot dog. He had to earn it. And when I give it to him, he understood he earned it. And so he could replicate things to get things from me. So because of my timing and experience, it was easier. It's not the same for everybody, and it's dog and handler dependent. And I would say that sometimes it never happens for handlers. Sometimes dogs and handlers don't mesh well with each other. And it's either delayed or they just never create that bond. But the bond is transferable. Once you build a bond, they can go to another handler. That's not a problem. But what you lose, because the bond is all about food, water, shelter, and pack fulfillment, and anybody can replicate that, and depends on is it better than the previous handler. But what can't be transferred is the trust that's built between you and the dog through exposure out on the street, your home life, on how you interact with the dog. We're predictable, and these dogs are watching us for body language and energy, and that's their communication. So they're watching us 24/7. You come out of the front door, they're watching you. You're coming out the back door, they're watching you. That as soon as you have a presence, they're watching you. When you're driving, they're watching you. And we forget that. So the bond is quickly built, sometimes stronger than others, but the stronger the bond, the easier the trust is built. And that's not transferable. So I think that if you were to even let's say Kenzo was to go to another handler, the bond would probably be as similar, because I would tell him how to do it. But that trust, he would have to build that. And that's what takes the longest and sometimes never happens.
Wow. What did you think of the support you and the department received, you know, the letters, the cards from our local community, our local law enforcement, and, you know, law enforcement around the country when this happened?
It was impressive. It was very comforting. You know, Kenzo not only belonged to me, but he belonged to this department and to this community. And he was a hero that night that he died. And I think that people really gravitated towards it. And a lot of people showed the necessary support for me and for the department. I never felt alone. I felt that the community was hurting just as much as I was. And that was comforting. It was impressive. I still get things today in the mail. So it's not even 2 months later, and it's still happening. So it's pretty impressive. And I also felt another desire to get up there the night or the day of his memorial and thank the community for that, because I think that they stepped up, and it was something special.
Seeing that loss and seeing how much it affected other people was so unique and so special. For you personally, what was the hardest part?
The hardest part was just knowing that I'm never going to get to see him again. And the desire to want to keep working with him. We had just competed up in Scottsdale at the police canine, the desert dog trials. And every year it's a competition of dogs all over the state and some of the best ones of the state. And we compete in the same scenarios and same exercises. And I had competed with Rico and we did well. We had gotten second place in handler protection. It's an event on Sunday. And I had a lot of expectations of the trials on how it should be. And I knew that Kenzo and I weren't there yet. And we were gonna get there, but I was humble enough to know that he's young. This is our first time coming. And I have a lot of expectations from my previous dog, but we're gonna see what Kenzo can do. And he ended up getting third in that same event,
wow,
the handler protection. So he stepped up and I trusted him and he trusted me and it was great. But no, the hardest part was knowing that I couldn't do it again. The night that he was sent into the yard, it was, we always know that it's a potential, but once it happened, I knew that I would never be able to say goodbye to him again. And that was hard. I think that was the hardest part, knowing that I never got to say goodbye. And we always know it's possible, but just to say you never said goodbye is hard, I would say. Understanding the calamity of what had happened, but having to live with it almost daily, having a retired dog at home, Rico, they were next to each other in the kennel. So now when I go out and feed Rico, I would feed Kenzo at the same time. And knowing that I'm feeding Rico, but I can't feed Kenzo, is a constant reminder that he's not here anymore. That's a very difficult part of my day, and it's daily. And it gets easier from time to time, but there's some days that are a little bit more difficult. But ultimately, it is just understanding that you'll never have another moment with Kenzo is very difficult to live with. And you're constantly reminded because you're feeding your other retired canine. So, but it gets easier. And I think Rico being there is very helpful, because knowing I can still feed one of my dogs. So it's good.
Do you think Rico understands that Kenzo's gone?
They didn't play a lot. You know, Rico being 11 years now and Kenzo was 5, they were on much different energy levels. So I don't feel, I mean, it's kind of hard to, we like to put human attributes and feelings in our dogs. Mm-hmm. But I think Rico is okay with it not happening, because they were out in the yard together, but they didn't play or interact. They weren't buddies. Mm-hmm. I think that they knew that their purpose, and this new dog gets to go to work with dad and I could stay home with mom, and I'm good with that. So nothing changed for Rico. He still gets fed. He still gets to stay home with mom and he still sees me go to work. So I don't think that it really affected them on a big scale.
That's good. That's good. Rico's on that retirement plan, you know.
Oh, he's enjoying it.
He just wants the belly rubs and the snacks.
That's all he needs, and that's all he wants, and he's pretty content with it.
All right, we're gonna take a break. We're gonna talk more with Deputy Rodriguez on PCSD. What's the word?
County would like your input on the possibility of building a new jail. The Pima County Adult Detention Center's Blue Ribbon Commission recently launched an online survey to measure public opinion on the prospect and will use the results along with other data in its final findings report. The survey will be open through January 13th, and the commission will present its report to the county administrator on January 31st. Take the survey today.
And welcome back to PCSD.
What's the word?
We are talking with Deputy Rodriguez. He's one of the members of our K-9 unit. Deputy Rodriguez, you and Deputy Richard Carlson just recently received a Public Service Achievement Medal at the Sheriff's Department Awards Ceremony. First of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
The award was for your work with the selection process of K-9s and training for the department. Talk to us about that process of selecting a K-9 and then training them.
Well, first of all, it's a very daunting task. The department is entrusting you to drive to our vendor, a vendor that we have used for many, many years, over decades. And these vendors know exactly what they're doing. And me only having you know, the first time I went, I had 4.5 years experience in the unit. And just going there and being entrusted to choose a dog worthy enough to come bring back to Pima County and train it up and say, hey, you are now a dual purpose canine for the Pima County Sheriff's Department, and you're going to go do great things. That's a huge burden. But what we use is it's called the PSP testing process. And I'm not going to butcher it. I'm not going to attempt to butcher it. But it's a abbreviation of a German word that when translated into English, it's the police patrol dog examination. And what it is it's a process that has been passed down from generation of handlers since the 1950s. And it tests and evaluates the inherent drives of each canine. Each dog, they go off of instinct. They think, but anything that they do is off of instinct. And it's all based on their genetics, and it's all inherited, and it's all instinctual. So what we do is this PSP testing process is we give them either scenarios or exposures to test those draws, just those drives, that raw drive in the dog that it's untrained. You can't fake it. You can't practice for it. We're triggering things that we'll see certain aspects of the dog that they're going to perform a certain way. So we evaluate all the dogs on the same playing field in the same area. And each of these dogs test differently. And each one of these dogs are worthy of being a police canine. That's why the vendors have their own testing processes, and they're not willing to sell a dog to an agency unless they, you know, stand by their own product. So when we show up, we have a stricter PSP testing process, and the vendors know they're used to what we're doing and how we're testing the dogs. So each of these dogs go through these tests. They understand that they're all worthy and you have to pick the best one. But there's usually one that shines pretty well, and that's the one that gets to come home. That's the one that gets the title of being a Pima County dog. And it's because of the strict testing and what has been passed on from generation of handlers, that's what distinguishes between mediocrity and excellence. And each of these dogs are capable of going through the training. And even the ones that would fail our process or our testing evaluation, with a little bit of training, we could bring out those drives and bring it right where it needs to be. And some of these dogs are young and they've just never been exposed to some of these. But I do remember when we test Kenzo, we were in the market for two dogs for Deputy Matt Salmon, who had passed away in October with Canine Rider. We tested two dogs and Kenzo came out number one, but quickly behind him was Canine Rider. And either one of those were worthy of being a Pima County dog. And so we brought them both home. And they are phenomenal dogs. So we know that our testing process works. Most of our dogs, whether depending on which vendor we go to, when we do test them, we're confident in their evaluation process, and we have a high success rate when we come back to training them that they're going to do well. So it is a lot of work. Once we bring them home, it's about 8 to 12 weeks of training these dogs with the handler, depending on how new the handler is and their previous experience. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of work. It's a lot of time committed. And I am appreciative of the award that given to me and Deputy Carlson.
Yeah, big congratulations. It's such a lengthy process.
Yes, so. It is. Typically, you don't want a dog older than 4 years because their longevity with our department would be cut short. Mm-hmm. But it depends on where you get them from. And sometimes they go through competitions in Europe because it's a sport to train dogs and go through the competitions there. And once they're done and they're championed, they either will breed the dogs based on their genetics or sell them to agencies or kenneling and vendors in the United States. So then when those vendors get the dogs, then they will train them in narcotics and police exercises to get them ready to be a police dog. Because in Europe, they're not intended to be, they're just intended to be working dogs. Mm-hmm. And they could be for the military, for police, for various fields. But if you get a younger dog, some of these vendors have breed their own dogs. Mm-hmm. So after a year, year and a half, they're ready to sell these dogs. And that's when you would test them for that. And they are as green as can be. They haven't had any training in the police world. So it's even more difficult for those dogs too.
Wow. Yeah. You talked about the extensive process and training here in Pima County. What's the difference between a single use canine and a dual purpose?
So the difference is simply what their job is. For single purpose dogs, it could be for detection only. And the different types of detection could be, we have EOD, which is bomb sniffing dogs, and then narcotic sniffing dogs. And we have one EOD dog with the sheriff's department. And then we have the four jail canines that are detection only. Then there's two that are assigned to our drug interdiction unit, and then one out in Ajo. And those are the single purpose dogs, and their sole purpose is to search for and detect the presence of odor of narcotics. Now, when you talk about a dual purpose canine, there's another specialty they have. And our dual purpose canines, like Canine Kenzo, he could search for narcotics, but then he had patrol work in it, we call it patrol work. And it's the ability to sniff for human odor. So they have the ability to search for narcotic odor and human odor. And that's the dual purpose canines are the ones that would be considered a bite dog, the ones that you know that can apprehend people as a use of force. But also they can search for articles that have human odor on them. They're not searching for, if you were looking for a firearm, they're not searching the difference between if a bomb sniffing dog who is going to sniff out gunpowder and search for that firearm versus our dogs would be searching for the human odor on that firearm. So we could find flashlights, we can find keys, we can find pieces of evidence that have been dropped by suspects or victims, firearms that have been dropped. You know, use your imagination what you could be searching for with human odor, cell phones, anything that has a trace of human odor on, depending on how long it's been, the dogs can pick up on it and search for it. It's a use of force, and also the ability to search for human odor. That would be the easiest distinction between them.
I didn't know you guys did that. So are you guys doing that pretty often? If there's a case, you know, CID's working a case, they need to find something. Are they calling you and saying, hey, can you guys go out there and look for this?
Yes, that's one of the calls that we would receive. It's not only just for uses of force, but it is the main purpose of these dual purpose canines are locating tools. We don't want to necessarily use the dogs as a use of force. Unless we absolutely have to. And there's a lot of criteria that needs to be met for those. But the first and foremost purpose of these canines is locating tools. So whether we're trying to locate evidence or cell phones or firearms, we will get calls from patrol or CID saying, hey, we can't find it. We will try looking for it ourselves, but we need somebody to come out and do it. And then our expertise would say, okay, it's probably a good idea that we use our dog, or maybe we'll bring out the EOD dog for the firearm, because their human odor dissipates. And if it's been a couple hours, that human odor may or may not be on the object that we're looking for. If we're looking for drugs that were dropped, we don't want our dogs to be able to put it in their mouth. Because again, we were talking earlier, they want to put things in their mouth. So even though we don't train them to do that, I think that if they had a chance, they would find some drugs on the ground and put it in their mouth, and we don't want that. So depending on the circumstances and what we're looking for, that is definitely something that we would be able to help out with.
Interesting. I never knew that. As you're training the dogs, you know, you're sending them to very serious situations when it calls for that bite, I guess. Are you guys thinking about that in the back of the head when you're training or when you're sending them out?
I would. It's not even in the back of our heads. It's on the forefront. It's talked about often. We know the reality of what we're dealing with. We're not going after the simple beer skip suspects. We're going after violent people for homicide, aggravated assault, rape. We're searching for and trying to locate people who are committed to avoid apprehension at all costs from police. They don't want to get caught. They don't want to go back to prison. They don't want to go to jail. So that's their motivation. So we know who we're going after and who we're trying to locate and simply locate. And so we talk about it often, the dangerous situations that we're going to put these dogs through. And the fear is real, but it's necessary. And having these dogs do what they do and training them well to do it, they're giving us a chance to go home to our loved ones. That's their purpose. That's their sacrifice. And we know that that is the sacrifice, and we have to don't take it for granted. And even though the fear is real and it's necessary, we have to make sure that these dogs have the fighting chance too, because they are going to go in areas that we can't go, the areas that we can't see. And we're instilling that trust that we talked about earlier into these dogs, knowing that they could potentially sacrifice themselves without hesitation. So what we need to do is train regularly. We train every Wednesday. Mm-hmm. We have to do at least 16 hours for each specialty. So 16 hours for narcotics and 16 hours for patrol work. Every Wednesday, every month, every year, this is how we have to do it. And it's that training and also the evaluation, the PSP testing process, the evaluation of these dogs before we even purchase them, and the constant training and the exposures shown, given to the dog, that's what gives them the edge. That's the one that's going to be able to get them home with us. So, you know, we're putting that in trust in them to bring us home, but we're also going to give them the arsenal that they need to come home. So it's all encompassing. It comes full circle, you know, from the testing process. You know, hey, we're testing this dog and it has to perform a certain way because of the dangerous situations. We bring them home and we train the handler and the canine knowing the dangerous situations that they're going to go in. And then when we send them in to a yard, into a building, we all know the dangerous situation, the calamity of it. And it's the training and that evaluation is going to give the dog the ability to come back home. So they have the exposure and the training to survive the unthinkable.
This has been so eye-opening. I had no idea how much training goes into each of these canines. One question that I have is, and we see this all the time, or hear this all the time, that the commands are not in English. Why is that?
It just depends on where the dog is purchased from. These commands, whether they're in English or in Dutch or in German, French commands are used sometimes, some Polish commands, Czech commands, regardless what it is, it is meaningless to a dog. And we like to give human attributes to our canines or our pets, but you could say pumpernickel. and you can train a dog to do something and say pumpernickel, and it doesn't even mean anything to the dog. It's a sound.
Yeah.
And that's all it is. It's just that communication. It's just the tone of your voice and the sound of the word, and it triggers them to do something based on those drives that they're inherent that they have and instinctual. I wouldn't even get hung up on, oh, why does that dog have those commands? It's just where they came from. Mm-hmm. Most of our dogs come from the Netherlands and they speak Dutch. So whoever trained that dog put Dutch commands because that's what they were speaking. There's some other vendors that have breeding programs here in the US and all they know is English commands. So we actually have, we've had Czech commands, we've had French commands, we have English commands, and primarily it's Dutch just because of the sport for working dogs and police canines in Europe. Mm-hmm. So that's why you'll see a lot of German and you'll see a lot of Czech, you'll see a lot of Dutch commands. But there are English speaking dogs out there and they know it's whatever word you give them. And some of our commands are in English. Even for Kenzo had some English commands. It's just whatever is easiest and learned by that dog.
Do they know by the tone of your voice that either something serious or even more serious? What is that help too?
Yes, the tone and affliction of your voice is very important. When you're doing obedience, the dogs know when you're serious and when you're not. And when sometimes they'll be like, nah, he's not that serious. I don't think I have to listen this time. Versus when I have strong affliction and tone, they know and you can actually see them. And one thing that we train our handlers to do is to manipulate those drives in the canine. So you have pack drive and you have prey drive. Those are the primary drive. So pack drive is just obedience. And sometimes you'll have a dog, and prey drive is when they're wanting to go after something like prey. So if they saw, if we're taking a walk and you see a cat run across the road, their ears perk up and they're focused on it and they won't take their eyes off it. That's prey drive. But if he's in a certain drive like prey and I don't want him to be, I have to use a tone of voice and affliction to get him out of that drive and then give him a command to heel next to me or sit next to me, and their ears come down and they go back and they look up at you. You just manipulated those two drives. So the tone of your voice is how quickly that happens, and the bond, and then also the trust, and also the exposures and training that you've gone through.
Man, I give you guys a lot of credit. I struggle with trying to get my two huskies just to sit down and not be so hyper. I mean,
it's a lot of work, but it's my job. You know, I get to come home. I get, again, we were talking about what's the best, why do I want to be in this unit? I get to come home, and imagine going home or going to work with your two huskies to teach them to sit.
All right.
Could you do it?
Yeah, probably after.
You could, because you have 8 to 10 hours to train that in your dog.
Right.
And I think that's one thing that everybody in this unit and in the industry understands, that we get to come to work and train our dogs to make them do inspiring things. They're very impressive animals. And, you know, I appreciate you saying, like, we do a lot, but this is my job. You know, we come to work, we do our job, we train, and it's all for those dangerous situations, never knowing. We need to have these dogs performing at the drop of a hat. We need to know that they're going to perform the way they're expected to perform, and it's based on the training and the exposures that we're giving them. So it's a lot of work, but that's what I get paid to do, and I get to come to work and do that, and I'd be excited to do it again.
Yeah, then that leads us into our next question. What is next for you? Are you wanting to get another canine partner?
I would love the opportunity to work another canine. I have been given an opportunity to work Deputy Salmon's. When Deputy Salmon passed away, his canine was left without a handler. And it was only 2 months before Kenzo had passed away. So I had an opportunity to work another dog. As much as I would love for that to be in the future, I think that the needs the department and the mission of the department outweigh that hope and dream. After 12 years of being on with the department, I do feel that it's time to progress my career and test for sergeant. So I'm going to be taking the test in the beginning of the year to hopefully promote to sergeant.
Good and, for you.
And start, you know, helping with the leadership.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, wish you good luck.
Yeah.
You know, we're in the new year. We're talking about plans for the new year. Do you have any like goals for the new year?
Well, first of all, pass that sergeant's test.
Okay.
That's a big one, right?
Here's the hardest one.
It is the hardest one. And luckily, Kenzo afforded me an opportunity to time to prepare for that. And I do thank him for that. So that is a big goal of mine for the new year. But I still have the same resolution every year. It's always just to be better than the previous year. And as difficult as this 2023 was for me and the unit, I know that I can better myself and I need to be better. And so that's always my goal. Just try to be a better person, a better father, a better husband, a better police officer than I was a year before, and just keep progressing and die, and don't get stagnant. So whether that is with stripes on my sleeve, with a leash in my hand, whatever it be, it's just my goal is to be better than the previous year.
Those are great leadership qualities. Command staff, are you listening?
I know. It's like we're doing the oral board right now.
Yeah.
We're preparing you for it.
I appreciate it.
And Helica, what about you?
Every year is the same thing, Kevin. You know, be better, like, similar to Deputy Rodriguez, be better than the year before. And, you know, I always say new year, new me. And then about May, I'm like, same year, same me. So hopefully, you know, eat better, exercise, all that good stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I'd say exercise. I want to take more time off, like go on vacations, the beach or something.
Just you letting me know that I'm going to be carrying the torch here.
That may be a hint. No, just take more time and spend more time with family, you know, where we're not doing whatever, school or sports. We just kind of sit there and just kind of hang out and become a family.
Yeah, I love that. One question I have before we go for you, Deputy Rodriguez. I have a 5-year-old little Yorkie, Gustavo. Now, he would not make it passed any sort of training, let me tell you. He is so energetic. What advice do you have for people who have these little rambunctious dogs? I mean, you work with the pros, right? But what about for the ones that are just hanging out at the house?
Well, I have a little mini dachshund, a little wiener dog named Zona at home. And I know what you're talking about. I cannot train her as well as I can train Kenzo and Rico, and it's just because of their drives that is instinctual and inherited, and their genetics. But I would say that I am able to do things with Zona that I don't know if everybody would be able to do. But I think the important, and when you're speaking to new handlers who have never trained a dog, and they're going to be training a Pima County dog that's worthy of being a Pima County dog, and that's a heavy burden. And they have no knowledge of it. So I just tell them, be consistent, have plenty of repetitions. These dogs understand repetition. They understand consistency. And so if you can have, it's going to take a long time. And I know you don't have 8 to 10 hours to spend on it like I would with Rico or Kenzo, but just stay consistent. Don't let them off. It's like training. It's training dogs is a lot like raising kids. If you're consistent with them and, the repetitions are there, they will learn. And in also that they have to understand what you want them to do. And if they respect the corrections and they respect the rewards, they will do it automatically. They will choose to do it because nobody wants to be punished. Nobody wants to be disciplined. So if you set up the parameters and make it achievable, then they will do fine. So it's just repetition, consistency, set obvious boundaries and parameters, and exploit them. And when they do well, give them a hot dog.
Yeah.
You'll give them a little piece of a hot dog and they will love you for it and they'll probably want to do it again.
So there might be hope.
There may be. We'll report back. Don't hold me to it.
Well, I just want to say thank you so much, Deputy Rodriguez, for coming on here. And we really appreciate that, talking to us about your relationship with Kenzo. We know it's still tough, it's still there. So we really appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me. I really do appreciate it. And I think that one thing that Kenzo did do for the unit is put us on display and really show everybody what we do. And it's as great as it sounds, it's hard work. And everybody in the unit lives that and breathes that. The families live it and breathe it. And every year is a constant battle to keep getting better and improve your dog. And so it's nice to share that with the community.
Well, we appreciate your time. We appreciate all you do. And of course, everything Kenzo did. Good luck to you in the sergeant test.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Good luck.
All right. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of PCSD.
What's the word?